Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the United Religions Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio's presentation of Indigenous Voices. Indigenous Voices airs every other Thursday on Now Time Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Indigenous Voices features Indigenous artists, activists, wisdom keepers, and spiritual leaders raising their voices to bring messages from an Indigenous perspective on cultural heritage, women and children, the environment, our relationship to Mother Earth, preservation of sacred sites, human rights, spirituality, religion, and interfaith. The United Religions Initiative is a global grassroots interfaith network that cultivates peace and justice by engaging people to bridge religious and cultural differences and work together for the good of their community and the world. To join the call during Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, call 424-243-9656. You may also live stream or listen to the podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Now Time Radio. Welcome to Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams. We continue our journey around the world, visiting different countries, different cultures, different sovereign nations around the world, and becoming aware of the richness of Indigenous traditions that are alive and well in our global community. And what's so important about this is that in Now Time Radio and Indigenous Voices, we want to raise the voice of the Indigenous roots of our existence here on Mother Earth as a way of pausing and reevaluating where we are, what is our relationship to the earth, as a true indicator of our capacity to build relationships with one another that are sustainable and viable long into the future. My guest today is Nana Kwabena Brown from Washington, D.C. I have been in Nana's presence for years, and I've always been uplifted and inspired and sometimes even in awe of whether a word comes from its mouth or not, just the presence that you carry, Nana Kwabena Brown, when you show up to events and ceremonies. Although I'm not in Washington, D.C. anymore, in fact, I'm down in southern Alabama, your presence is still very much a part of my own growth and development. So welcome to Now Time Radio, the voice of the Indigenous of the world.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for that very, very wonderful introduction. I truly appreciate it, and I'm very honored to be on your show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You know, we've traveled over these past few months from, I think we started out in Peru and went to Russia, to Siberia with the Republic of Altai representative, and in, up in Vancouver with the Slima Nation, and parts of America with our Native American family, and down even to Australia. So here we are with you today, and we have, you know, what I feel is so unique and so important about our conversation today is that with you we get West Africa, but we also get the bridge of the diaspora from the effect of one separation on one sense, but really, can we ever really be separated from our roots? And so I just am so excited to have an opportunity to have you on the show. I want to begin. I was reading your website, and I noticed that there was a statement that you made that you really had little choice in being who you are today and what you are today. Can we use that as a beginning of our conversation about Unana Kwabena? For those of you who are listening for the very first time to being introduced to Nana Kwabena, I want you to know that he is the chief priest of the Temple of Inyame in Washington, D.C. He is a traditional healer in the Akan tradition of Ghana, West Africa, and a former Sumerian with two Masters of Arts degrees. He has worked as a substance abuse educator, prevention counselor, rites of passage coordinator, family enhancement specialist, parenting skills trainer, and premarital and couples counselor. So welcome again. And why is it that you say you had no choice in being who you are today?
My inspiration in life was my mom. She was the harbinger. She was the one that really took the first steps in moving me and my brother and my sisters forward. She comes from a very solid West Indian background. I was raised in a West Indian household with a lot of pride in West Indian ancestry, African ancestry, and just a real pride and interest in my heritage and my past. My mom, in 1957 was really a natural haircut, if you can imagine.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
So I've always had that environment of pride, pride in race and pride in self, and have had a mom who was very, very progressive, very avant-garde, in a spiritual interest. And that was a great environment for a child to grow up in who had a natural inclination towards spiritual things and a natural environment of being proud of who and what he happened to be. And so my involvement and my interest in spiritual things began at a very early age. But at my 15th birthday, I had read Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. I've probably read it about maybe 4 to 5 times between my 15th year and my 18th year. I've read it cover to cover. And what that did, along with other books on spirituality and yoga did, it was just really awakened me at a very, very early age to my spirituality and into my wish and desire to develop myself along those lines. I thought perhaps at an early age that I would be a yogi, a monk, and live in the Himalayas somewhere. And then what I began to do in my early 20s was I began to become aware of my African ancestry and on a deeper level. And as I began to investigate the meaning behind that which you call African art, most of which are African religious and spiritual items, I began to see that the same spiritual truths that existed within East Indian culture, Native American culture, and mystical Christianity, mystical Judaism, and Sufism, that these same spiritual principles are quite universal in terms of spiritual principles, are very much found within African culture. And with that, in my early 20s, I began to take that same interest, same desire for growth and development, same desire which for expansion of mind. I began to involve myself in it from an African perspective, understanding that God had given to everyone a system, a religion, a spirituality. And so in my early to mid-20s, I made the choice of continuing my spiritual studies and in pursuing it as it had been presented to my African ancestors and African culture. And that's where I've been ever since. And I've, in my involvement in African religion, I have made every effort to learn about the African secret society, learn about the spiritual aspect, not just the religious aspect in terms of ritual and ceremony, further and deeper into the spiritual societies, so-called secret societies, which is really spiritual societies, all of which talk about the same truth, the same long-term kind of mission of every human being, which is to become one with God. And so here I am, 70 years later.
Amazing. What was the one, if there is such a thing, I think that sometimes, you know, we're born into our path and it kind of finds its way into our consciousness and we start to follow it. But was there a catalytic moment for you when you had your awareness finding the mysticism, so to speak, of African spirituality and secret society? Was there some that catalytic moment that you said, oh, this is it. This is really what I'm called to do?
I would say that that in the 1960s, when we had another awakening of African consciousness, certainly not the first. You know, we know about Catherine Dunham, Pearl Primus, Zora Neale Hurston. You know, folks mm-hmm. from that era. They also were very, very involved in African culture, African retentions in the Americas, etc. The one that came through in the 60s is the one that I got caught up in. And when I just deduced or concluded that God must have given something to those of us of African ancestry and found it and found within it, or I would say actually the way that I would say that it found me is that when I began to investigate, I used to sell African art. And I began to see the same principles associated with these various African groups in terms of the concept of the force or energy being primal, spirit being primal, and seeing that it is so much exactly the same all over the world. That was my turning point to know that, oh, you know what, I have been awakened to something that makes me feel complete as a person. And that is, I think all roads lead to God. However, I think that the thing that gave me a sense of completion was to be on a road that my ancestors walked. I know that I could be on any road. I could be on the Hindu road. I could be on a Native American road, all of which I have really investigated. However, a sense of completeness to realize that I had found something that made me complete as a person. That is a way to connect with the Creator, the way to have ethics, principles, morals, etc., to live a good life, a way to evolve myself spiritually and in a way that was presented to my ancestors, I felt more complete as a human being. And eventually what came out of that was the opportunity to become a priest within African traditions. And let that be, I would say, a launching pad. You know, I don't think that one becomes somebody by initiating. I think you become something. I think you're already somebody.
Okay.
You know, yeah. And so, you know, I initiated as a priest, and that was just the beginning of me doing deeper investigation, talking to the elders in Africa, talking to the elders, African elders in South America, and really, really seeing this way that God had revealed God's self to people of African descent. And so it was a very wonderful for me to be complete as a person of African descent, you know, to approach God through the way of my ancestors.
And so your journey for yourself and this reconnection, which, you know, it was in your DNA anyway, I believe that there's a voice in that that leads us to that path of connection. But it became not just your journey, but having had an opportunity to know you over years, you then extended that to the community, specifically in the Washington, D.C. area, and I'm sure beyond. So how did you then take – why was it important for you to take – to bring that initiation inward and then take it out to the community? What did you see the community could benefit from by being anchored in its African tradition, its African roots, as a part, especially when you think of the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and so forth, specifically in Washington, D.C., for the African-American community and all the changes that were happening? What was important about that experience for you?
To be aware of. I have tremendous respect for religion in general. However, I do understand that the most important thing is our relationship with the Creator, our relationship with Mother Earth, and on a daily basis, I become more and more attuned to that. This gentleman that comes on the Cosmos, this young man, his last name is Tyson.
Oh, yeah.
It really catalyzed me in terms of looking at the sacredness of the earth and the ancientness of it as a part of a star system. And I know that wrapped in that is the fact that traditional people around the world are more closely aligned with the thoughts, the theorems, the hypotheses of the astrophysicists than most organized religions that I know about. And this is something that has to be shared with of other human beings so they can understand who they are and their place within the universe, as well as who they are culturally, as well as who and what your ancestors have contributed to the world scene, as well as their ancestors and what God has revealed to them vis-a-vis the Dogon and Sirius B star in terms of ideas and concepts of creation, which is so very, very important for us to align ourselves with whatever our cultural path happens to be, that we can be moving towards connecting with the creation or the creator of that primal cause that brought all this into existence. And this helps us to really, as human beings, to be fuller and more complete human beings. And I think that as God has revealed to me that just as you are, the kind of teacher and revealer that you are, that there's a certain kind of obligation and responsibility to share this awakening and understanding of other people.
I wanted to, as you were talking, I was thinking about, I've been involved with the United Religions Initiative for a while, but over the last 10 months, almost 12 months now, actually, we were involved in what we called a deep listening process. And this was with the Global Indigenous Initiative. And as you were talking, I was reflecting on some of the conversations. These are Indigenous representatives from, well, really from around the world. And so we would have long conversations and different languages and translations. And so you have to really be patient and listen. And one of the questions that we talked about, I think, maybe 4 or 5 months, just this one question, who is indigenous? And one of the outcomes of that conversation was that that in order to really get to the root of that, we have to be broad. There was a time that we were known by our place, where we came from, you know, and lived our lives and the connection to our ancestors, or as our family down in Australia would say, to our song lines that not just are connected to the ley lines of the earth, but go to the star systems. But then came migration, which was forced migration through the Atlantic slave trade. And then, you know, recently I learned that the Atlantic slave trade actually comprised about 10 to 20% of the slave trafficking that was out of Africa. And I wasn't aware of the extent of that. So I'm using that as one example. Also, the movement of people, forced migration of people to other parts of countries so that colonialism could have control over, well, the colonizers of resources. And so you have now all of a sudden the song lines are not just of the place physically. I really believe in the result of this conversation is that we have to be as sensitive as of this place of our spirit. And so when you were talking, I was thinking about how the healing energy that is found in African spirituality for those of us who are of African descent, how that is following its sort of modern day aspect of finding its own soul root. And I'm saying that because I think that I do a lot of work with young people as well. And I find that the more they learn about their roots and have an opportunity to not just the mental learning, but the soul learning, putting their hands on a drum or dancing and being involved in ceremony and ritual, that it's very uplifting, healing, and revitalizing for them in terms of a specific level of self-awareness. I know that was a long conversation piece there, but I wanted to say that and get your reaction to it. How important it is for these reconnecting these membranes, so to speak, or the cosmos vision, in terms of personal and our healing our relationship even with the Earth Mother.
Wow. Well, what immediately comes to me is that even though we've come, we of African descent have come here, some 6,000-7,000 miles, and even more for some of us, depending on what part of Africa. The ancestors traveled with us. The ancestors traveled with us. The various of the African spirits traveled with us. I'm just guessing that the tremendous amount that's locked up in our DNA that's there. And so mm-hmm. we have been removed from, quote unquote, our original indigenous environment. So much of the spiritual environment is definitely here in the African American church. I mean, the music, the preaching, the themes, the way the themes will work, the way the church is organized, it's just awesome and wonderfully and beautifully African. Within Latin America, in the Caribbean, the African practices are here. Thousands of miles from Africa intact. I mean, it's just an amazing thing when you realize that the spirits, the bodies go, and the spirit energies go along with them. And so, I mean, that's what we have. And that's what we have as an African people. And one of the things that I find so unique about African people, and which cannot be really identified or quantified scientifically, is rhythm. You have to read anywhere they can find the gene for rhythm. And so my conclusion is that one of the things that's about us energetically is that I humbly believe that we are rhythm. You know, it's not like we have rhythm. I believe that we are rhythm. And we brought it from Africa. I mean, you see it now, you see it in the African American church. You see it in the African Caribbean and Afro-South American cultural practices. It's there with us. Matter of fact, you see it in the African American athletes. And that's something that a cousin, my cousin Joe, who's a physician, pointed out some years ago. He said, how is it that these guys are 7 feet tall, have a size 18, size 20 shoe, and they run down the court like ballerinas? You know, what is there about them? What is there about their energy and their spirit that brings this kind of gracefulness? So even though we may be physically removed, spirit, the energy, the ancestors, the rhythm that we are, all these things are a part of us. It's so much a part of us, you know, and, you know, that's how I feel about it.
You know, I've traveled with elders from different traditions for some time, and one comment that comes up a lot in our conversations when we're together is you talked about the ancestors and how we came and our ancestors came. I have a question that I often ask is, are we our ancestors?
Yes, we are. We are our ancestors. There's a certain part of us that stays in heaven, and there's a certain part of us that reincarnates. There's no question. You know, most traditions that I have had the opportunity to investigate, African, Native American, I mean, also most other traditions I've been able to have a chance to investigate, they talk about a part of you stays in heaven and a part of you reincarnates. And that part that reincarnates doesn't really affect so much that soul that stays in heaven. Well, it does and it doesn't. So one can be, one on a soul level can be in heaven, and then one aspect of one's self or soul certainly has the ability to reincarnate. So we are our ancestors. We are, and we take on different personalities in each incarnation. And so it's one of those, I would say, mysteries of life and spirituality. We are them. At the same time, each personality that we inhabit, each time we come here, we're trying to bring that personality closer to God and closer to that soul that stays in heaven.
So is that the foundation to your statement on your on the Temple of Inyame's website, or I guess it's the Facebook, where it says the process reincarnation is governed by the laws of karma, which state relationships are forever and issues never go away. What goes around comes back around. The sins of the first generation fall on the second and third generation, and that for every cause there is an effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why one of the things that I love about indigenous cultures, African being amongst them, is the emphasis on relationships. You mentioned earlier Mother Earth. Oh, my. You know, a relationship to the earth. A relationship to the earth, the planet herself, also to the other species on the planet. You know, and realizing that we have to have healthy and balanced relationships with every aspect of life that's on the planet and with the planet herself, no question about it. And that in terms of that statement, our relationships with each other are so unbelievably important. You know, the way that we relate to not only the earth and the other species, fauna and flora, animal and plant that are on the earth, it's also very important that we have the kind of relationship with each other that is wholesome, godlike, that does no harm, that is mutually beneficial, that really acknowledges our own spirituality and the spirituality in others. And within that, within most traditional cultures that I know about, there's a period in the course of a year where we make amends. You know, we take a look at some of the issues that may have come up. Because we know that the most important thing, and this is a term that they use in Zaire, the Bantu. They call it Ubuntu. And that's the mm-hmm. proper relationship amongst human beings, the proper exchange of force or energy amongst human beings. And so how we manage our relationships and knowing how to manage our relationships is so important. Forgiving is so important. Apologizing is so important, you know. And it really is so important because it frees us up. It frees us up to really move closer to God. Matter of fact, it actually catalyzes and pushes us closer to God. We have to come to the best parts of ourselves to do that. And the other thing that goes along with that is that by doing that, we make a better world. By forgiving and apologizing, we make a better world. And what we don't apologize for, we will definitely do again. What we don't forgive, if we're not careful, we end up doing that same thing again. And what we don't make amends for within this lifetime, it'll be there waiting for us when we come back.
How does one make amends, or how do you apologize, let's say, if something happened and that person is no longer in your life or maybe has passed on? Do you carry that with you forever, or can you release that? Can you atone for that in the absence of that presence? How does one do that to really be complete with forgiveness and apologizing?
Oh, absolutely. The answer is yes, 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 unequivocally. With trusted friends and associates and people who are, you know, have high consciousness and good minds, and with the permission of that person who you need to apologize or to forgive, you can call that person's spirit forward. And the most important thing is to have people with clean hands, clean hearts, clean minds, and you know, with an understanding of ceremony and ritual, to call that person forward from the spirit world and to simply to forgive them and or to apologize to them, and then by all means to allow them or give them permission to go back, you know, to the spirit world. Therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed clinical counselors, they use this same technique. They don't call it calling forth the spirit. They call it empty chair technique. And I've seen it done many, many times. And so those are the ways you can do it. You can simply go to the graveyard where that person's buried and talk to them. Bring an offering. You know, bring an open heart, sincere heart. Or you can have a gathering where you call forth that spirit with the right people present. And then, you know, give your apologies and give your forgiveness. And one of the things that many of us are aware of is that when you do that, primarily you benefit, particularly with forgiveness. You are the one that benefits. You freeze your soul up, freeze your spirit up to really begin to be able to more focus on being a good person and being closer to the Creator. So that issues never go away. If we don't come around this time, excuse my bad English, you're going to see it the next time you come. And with that person, maybe a relationship, but you'll see.
Can you talk a little bit about the solar logos?
The solar logos. Ancient people have always understood that the sun, unquestionably, is the source of life within our planetary system. And you see it within Japanese culture, you see it in Chinese culture, you see it to a greater extent in Hindu culture, definitely you see it in Kemetic culture. It's a real understanding that it is the source of life. That's why this guy Tyson, deGrasse Tyson, that comes on, why I tell you, if I'm awake on Sunday night, I'm watching that show.
Uh-huh.
He said that we are made out of star stuff. And we on the planet Earth, we're a spin-off of stuff that came off our sun. All that we know is energy and life and consciousness. It comes from the stars. And for us in this particular planetary system, it comes from the sun. And it is the belief of many people in various parts of the world that within the sun, not only is the source of all energy within our planetary system that we know about, but the source of consciousness itself. That consciousness, that which we call consciousness, that we experience as we think, as we feel, and as we speak, that all of that had its origin from our sun, S-U-N, but had its origin from other stars which exploded out there within the universe. And so this intelligence that's there is the reason why we have intelligence, and it has conveyed its intelligence to our Earth. And within that sun or behind that sun, whichever way you want to take a look at it, there is a logos, there is entity, a presence of intelligence and consciousness, which if it were not there, we would not have it. You would not have it. And so many ancient people see that. And I just marvel sometimes that those who we call backward, illiterate, uncivilized, mm-hmm. when you hear theoretical physicists and astrophysicists are so much closer to what they're saying than, as I said earlier in our conversation, than those who are involved with organized religions. It's just an amazing thing to me.
It certainly is, and you touched on a subject that is very near and dear to my heart, and certainly as we are looking at the deep listening to our indigenous communities, is that in many of the more modern religions, the deification that has occurred of traditional practices. And then all of a sudden, as you say, I think about, a perfect example is the Dogon and of course, the Sirius star system, and how it's certainly been in our lifetime that science has been, in fact, maybe, 20 years, that it has been able to identify Sirius B. And I know that the Dogon also talk about Sirius C, and I don't think that has yet been discovered, or if it has, it's been fairly recent. And so here is this knowledge base of information that scientists are connecting with in terms of, like the strand theory and quantum physics and plasma energy and all these words that really are saying the same thing that many of our indigenous traditions have spoken about it's in their myths and their stories and their teachings and their spirituality, that we come from this great source, and in fact, it resides in each of us. And maybe, are we here to awaken to that, you think?
Yes.
Is that part of why we're here?
Yeah, we are. We are. And the thing is that, we all come here at different states of consciousness, different levels of consciousness. You mentioned the word karma before, different, karmic states that we have had, either we have created or have, we've created them, and so we're all here at different levels. However, the one goal that I believe in terms of this whole cosmic scheme is to take the personality in any incarnation and to move it closer and closer to its understanding of its origin within this star that we call the sun, which is part of a greater explosion that took place at some point in time. And that we realize that we are one with that consciousness, and that there are certain things which our ancestors were able to either intuitively understand or through inspiration understand or through God speaking to them understand, that there's a certain way of life that we're supposed to live to be in harmony with that. And love and forgiveness and kindness are foundational with that. And the more that we can allow ourselves to evolve after this, out of this, the physical aspects of ourselves and out of the animal aspects of ourselves and rise up higher and higher in our consciousness, we become closer and closer to our true source, our true origin, and our true self. And to me, that's the final product, for us within this human cycle, is it is consciously become one with the source of our origin. And, of course, we see that manifest by so many selfless souls that that have existed even within our lifetime. You know, talk about Dr. King, Malcolm X, within historical time, Harriet Tubman, Mary McLeod. When you see this selflessness, that it really is a manifestation of the elevation of their soul. And that's where we're supposed to be moving, you know, and through the great prophets, the one who was called Jesus, I mean, the one who was called Buddha, we see this. We see what's in their lives. And it was in our own lifetime. We have, as I say, Dr. King and others like that. That's how we, you know, and that's how we're supposed to do.
Mm.
And the end product of that is, from all the scriptures I've ever seen, is we have the object of staying up there within the spiritual realm, or coming back and further inspiring, influencing, lifting up, making a better world, a better society, a better culture amongst our fellow human beings. So.
You know, one day I had, I was preparing to do a talk, and I was referencing Dr. King, and I was reading, you know, the speech about, I've been to the mountaintop and I've looked over and I've seen the other side. And for the very first time, and it the depth of that really hit me, because I felt this sense of the physical self lifting, releasing the soul, and his soul being able to look beyond the physical into that, or the temporal aspect of who we are, to the broader cosmic vision of who we are, and realizing that perfection is, and we're on a journey to that. And often I think about all the things, you know, I've walked around the world with beautiful people. We made ourselves totally dependent on the love and kindness of others to show that peace exists. It's just not a story that we hear often. And it doesn't mean that there are not other things going on that are very negative and destructive on every level, but that there's also the story of the peace and the love that does exist. So where I'm going with that is, when I look at one of the questions that we get often is, why in the world would you spend time walking for peace when there's never been peace and never will be peace? That's just the way this world is. You know, when you go on a journey like that, you begin to separate in some way between what you see on a day-to-day basis and that other space where you access, maybe it's the I am that I am presence that comes in, and you're seeing from, it's like you go out into the universe looking back in, and part of what we see that is so destructive is the classroom, but then there's so much more. So it gives an interesting perspective in terms of the goodness that does exist. It gives a challenge to how we are, as we are in the physical, to be able to help make this right. Is it our responsibility to help make this right, the world that we live in, or is it our responsibility to keep reminding ourselves and others of who we really are?
Both.
Mm.
Both, because if we and when we realize that we are God, and that's in a totally non-egoistic, non-egotistical sense, that our true nature is God, then we have the responsibility of really, really awakening and enlightening that in our fellow human beings. And, of course, not only speaking it, talking it, but how we interact, how we get back to relationships, how we relate to other people, how we respond to them, has a lot to do with awakening the God that's inside of them. Not only awakening the God that's inside of them, encouraging the God that's inside of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Encouraging it, fanning the flame of the God that's inside of them. And that, of course, makes them a better person and makes them somebody who also is approaching back and moving back to full consciousness and full awareness of their origin as a human being. As a human being, And moving towards a complete humanness, because as we become aware of our spirituality, we become completely human, more completely human. And that's why teaching people about that, to be more completely human, is so important, that we're more than our fears. We're more than so much of the things that really, really keep us really terribly preoccupied and really, really distracted, you know, obfuscated from our true nature, which is God, good, the omniscient, the omnipotent. That's who we really are. We're more than our fears. We're more than the bad things that we may think, feel, and experience within this life. And I think that's a very powerful message that the various prophets have brought down up until this very day time, that we have to be about bringing peace on earth. We have to bring about justice on earth. We have to fight oppression wherever we find it. And we have to do things that make a better world. And by all means, that means to teach people about their godliness and to really be real champions, liberators, warriors for justice, and to be against injustice and unfairness where we find it. And that's what we have to do. And that's what every prophet got known. Most of them, if they kept their mouth shut, they would have stayed around a lot longer.
Right,
however,
right.
They felt really impelled, you know, to really do something in terms of the lack of alignment with everyday life around them and what they believe to be the universe's dictate, mandate for us to live our lives by.
So my follow-up question to what you just said and maybe all that we've said, as you look around the world today, we certainly are inundated with, you know, from extractive industries to human trafficking, I mean, you name it, to war and rumors of war, to human rights violations on so many levels. Is the superhuman aspect of who we are strong enough to right the situation for our generations to come?
Yes, absolutely. Good is more powerful than evil. You know, one thing, one of my teachers in Africa said to me, if you have palm oil in one hand and water in the other hand, in a bucket, you'll know which one is which. Because one, though it takes up the same volume, one is heavier than the other. And when you look at the legions of people that will send after one good person, it really shows you, or it really is an indication of how powerful good is. You know, good is more powerful. They tell a good man, throw down your arm. Resistance is futile. Well, because they know as long as you're going to fight for what's correct, you can be pretty, you know, pretty indomitable. And so we can never allow ourselves to be deceived by the evil and wicked forces which try to discourage us from always fighting against injustice. You know, which try to dissuade us from always fighting for equality, always fighting for elevating people's minds and consciousness. And the reason why those who are trying to elevate the consciousness are under attack, and are attacked by more numbers of people than themselves, is because of the power of good. Look what happened. Mm-hmm. Who ever thought that South Africa would be free?
Yeah.
So there are serious political issues that are there, no question about it. Who ever
mm-hmm.
thought that we would get what we've gotten within the United States of America? Though there's still a lot more that needs to be done. You know, because the power of good is something that's indomitable. It's not, you know, if someone had a choice between being good, between being strong and being powerful, you know, there's always somebody who can be a little bit more powerful, but there's nobody who could be more stronger than you when your strength is tied to the awareness and power of your spirit and your connection to God. So, yes, good people always triumph as long as good people are moving forward to make changes.
Mm. How do we continue to remember who we are? Is that where rituals and ceremonies come in?
It's where rituals and ceremonies come in. It's where really spending time with the oldest people in your family, hearing family stories, hearing about our relationships and relatives who are no longer here and where they came from and what they accomplished. It's in collecting folk tales within the family, healing techniques within the family, rituals which are in the family that are done, which are pertaining to that family. It's in having a system or that we set up formally or informally of rituals of passage that move us from one stage to the next appropriate stage for us within life. It's with encouraging the children to spend time with the elders and the elders to spend time with the children. And, of course, as much as possible to acquaint people with what is it that their ancestors did in terms of connecting to God, spirituality, the life force, a good life, etc. It can be done, and I believe there are many people who are doing it today. African, Native American, around the world, there are those who are really, doing these kinds of things, ceremonies, rituals, and particularly connecting elders to the young ones, and then passing on the family rituals, mm-hmm. and history.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done, and we need to actively and deliberately do it. It's so very important.
I in reading your bio, I was very much aware of the amount of energy that you spend in terms of counseling around relationship, building, strengthening, and preservation, whether it's one-on-one or whether it's with couples. So I see that you're such a powerful energy for the healing of relationships. How... Is this a way of taking the spiritual knowledge and wisdom and connection to the I am that I am into community and helping to strengthen our relationships as families so that we can raise children and be together in a multi-generational way that is positive and healing?
I would say yes, and as you were speaking, I was thinking about our first relationship, which is with ourselves and with our Creator, and how that manifests itself in our behavior, and how we can begin to, model and teach this behavior to other people within our families and in our communities, by there being certain things which we will and will not do, and certain things we will and will not accept. And certain things in terms of codifications, and Guza Saba is a beautiful one. 42 terms of Ma'at, 10 commandments are another, that we begin to take these codifications as roadmaps for life, that we practice with ourselves, that we practice in our families, and that we find ways at community gatherings to not only speak it, also to model it. And it's very, very powerful, and it's so powerful and yet so effective. If this more of us really try to introduce the codification of these principles, which is there, it's been with us. However, to live it and to model it and take it everywhere that we go, we will find that we will have, first of all, by doing it, we have a healthy relationship with ourselves. We create and stimulate and we catalyze healthy relationships within our family. As we take it out, we talk to our neighbors, there's certain kind of conversations and energy conversations that we will not have, and certain that we will foster and encourage. And by doing that, we make fantastic and positive changes, powerful changes.
Wow. Thank you so much, Nana Kwabena Brown, for being my guest today. And I'll end it with just a final comment that I think brings a real grounding to, not that it's needed, but in terms of my own journey, I remember being with Baba Credo Mutwa, and he said, honorable ones, what must we do? Our minds have been so poisoned that we've lost something very important. How do we get it back and give it to our children? And I think one of the things that you offered in this interview, and I really, really thank you so much for being my guest today, is you gave us a glimpse into that. You gave us a glimpse into what what we may have lost, but it's not truly lost. And that is the gift of this conversation, that we can reconnect, and we can do that at such a deep level that as we remember who we are, we can remember our human family and the world in which we live. Thank you so much, Nana Kwabena Brown, for being on our show today.
God bless you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Been listening to Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, a partnership between the United Religions Initiative, the Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Please join us again for Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio.